Today on Maine Calling, renewed interest in artist Joseph Fiore, 100 years since his birth. If you were asked to list well-known Maine artists of the 20th century, the names Wyeth, Hartley, Katz, Nevelson, Ipkar, Dodd, or Porter might come to mind. But what about Joseph Fiore? His work is in major museums, including the National Gallery of Art and the Whitney Museum of American Art. But in recent years, he hasn't received the attention some of his contemporaries have. That's changing. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn more about Fiore. A new short film about his life and work debuts on Maine Public Television Thursday evening. And on Friday, a retrospective of his work opens at the Maine Art Gallery in Wiscasset. Artist Joseph Fiore, remembered on Maine Calling. That's just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Artist Joseph Fiore is having a moment 100 years after his birth. A film and retrospective exhibition celebrate Fiore's life and work. We're going to learn why he's so respected as a painter and teacher and how his time in Maine influenced him. Joining me for the hour, Carl Little, who is a Maine-based art critic, writer, and poet. He has written several books about Maine art and artists, and he is the winner of a Rabkin Lifetime Achievement Award. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you know Joe Fiore's work, or are you curious about the work of the artists who came to Maine in the 1900s and the 1950s and 60s? Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Carl, welcome to back to Maine Calling. Such a pleasure to see you.
You too, Jennifer. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, we know that Maine has long attracted artists from Frederick Edwin Church and Thomas Cole in the mid-1800s to Edward Hopper and Marston Hartley and, of course, the Wyeth family. And sometimes during this time, there were groups of artists who sort of came to Maine together. Tell us about the group of artists that started coming to Maine from New York City in the 50s and 60s, the group that Fiore was part of.
Yeah, that was a very exciting time for Maine and for this infusion of wonderful artists, most of them coming from New York City. I think a lot of them wanted to get out of the city in the summer, but it didn't make Maine just a place to go hang out. They ended up producing a lot of wonderful work. And that included people like Alex Katz, Lois Dodd, Joseph Fiore, Charles Dubac, Bernard Langley came here too. And they all sort of hung out together. They knew each other. They painted together. There was a wonderful show at the Farnsworth a couple of years ago called Slab City Rendezvous, which kind of highlighted just the energy of the time, all the interactions. Rackstraw Downs was another artist who came at that time. And Fiore was a part of that. Moving to Maine in 1959, buying 40 acres of land in Jefferson and settling in and really becoming a great Maine painter in the process.
And you say he settled in Jefferson. Were most of the names that you named in sort of the same area?
They were. It was generally around Lincolnville, a number of them, Searsmont, that area. Another artist that came at that time was Neil Welliver. And the wonderful thing about him was that he never looked at the coast. He went inland. He was an inland painter, the Allegash, that was his territory. So I think each one sort of had their sense of place, what the land, how the land spoke to them. And Joe Fiore was the same. He, he could do a painting looking back at Katahdin in the far distance. There's one of his the, there's a painting of that in the show at the main art gallery. But he could also look at the coast. He looked at the farmland. He looked at the tree. He loved trees. There are many, many tree paintings in his overall body of work.
And what we learned from the film is that he loved rocks.
Oh, he was a rock hound, totally. And that's actually how I met him and first came into contact with his work. There was a show at the old Maine Coast Artists in Rockport in 2004, and the show featured his rock paintings, the later ones. And I was stunned by them. I ended up writing a review for Art in America about the show. But yeah, he collected rocks wherever he went. He had a collection in his barn studio, and you look at them. There's a moment in the documentary where they show the rocks. They're very plain, very humble, and yet he had the power to transform them into these major abstract representational images. I still love those works the most of his work.
And so I want to ask you about his work. Tell us about it. Was he part of a school per se? If you were to, I'm hesitating as I ask because I know it's more than one thing, but if you look online at the major museums that have collected his work, it's mainly abstracts, but that is just the beginning, right?
He's an interesting just another example in a way of an abstract painter coming to Maine and then sort of succumbing to the irresistible charm of our state. Yes, he started out as a total abstractionist at the Black Mountain College in the late 40s. He studied with major abstract artists like Willem de Kooning and Ilya Bulatovsky and Joseph Albers. So he came out of that and really delved into abstract modes. And then later on decided, well, I still love the energy of that, but I want something more real. And coming to Maine really settled that for him. He really became a realist artist, but without losing the energy of his early work. And I might note that this is sort of a common occurrence. I think of two artists in particular, Marguerite Zorach, who came to Maine as a cubist and ended up doing these wonderful Maine landscapes. And then more recently, Stephen Pace is a wonderful painter who discovered Stonington in the 50s. And he was like a preeminent abstract expressionist painter, but he became a limner of the working waterfront. I mean, he loved going down and painting the lobstermen. And so it can have Maine can really have a significant impact on artists who come here to paint.
Have you had an opportunity to talk with any of them about that change and about sort of this move to more representational painting as soon as they come to Maine?
Well, not directly, but I mean, like in Pace's case, he was just he was a New York City artist. He was on a trip with some friends down the coast. Someone suggested he check out Deer Isle. He ended up in Stonington, and then as they say, the rest is history. I mean, he ended up buying a house. He and his wife lived there. That house, by the way, was given to the Maine College of Art as a retreat after he left Maine to return to his native Indiana. But I think he would say that, the landscape is so, not overwhelming, but it's there. It's hard to ignore.
For the audience who's just tuning in, we're talking about artist Joseph Fiore. And Carl, we're talking about his move to Maine. We're talking about his influence on American art. But it was not just as an artist, but also as a teacher, correct? Like who Joe Fiore is and was is best understood by his influence on others.
Yes, that's definitely part of his legacy. And I would point most directly to David Dewey, who curated the show at the Maine Art Gallery. David is, I think, one of the greatest watercolor painters in this country. And Joseph Fiore had an enormous impact on him. There's this story. I think they were at the Delaware Water Gap, and Fiore would take his students out to paint from nature, and David Dewey was looking over his sh shoulder as Fiore was working on a watercolor, and just sort of recognizing the Fiore's touch and the way he worked. It just, I think David Dewey says that that was when he decided he was going to be an artist for the rest of his life. So there's an example of, a major influence on a young artist. And I know that there are others too, but I David is really, and David ended up managing Joe and his wife's estate through the Falcon Foundation. So yeah, he's a very important figure.
I'm going to acknowledge right now that radio is not a visual medium. If people are interested in looking and seeing some of the work of Joe Fiore, you can, of course, go to the Maine Calling page on the web, as well as doing a search yourself. The last name is spelled Fiore. But Carl, how would you, if you were to describe his work to somebody, its energy, its colors, its impact on the viewer, how would you describe it?
Well, there's quite a range, and there's quite a few overlaps. So when we talk about sort of three distinct periods of his work, abstract and then representational and then abstract again, there's a lot of not gray area, but there are times in between that where he was combining the two. Some of the images of Maine will be a fairly traditional landscape of the coast, a waterfall, trees, and then in the abstraction, the abstract work, you might think of the cubists of Juan. He loved Juan Gris, for example, who was one of the great cubist still life painters. So you can see the relationship between his work and past masters. Picasso, he loved Gabriel Munter, who was a German artist. So there's you can see aspects of that in his work. He was a great colorist, but a modest colorist, I would say, not bright and shiny, but had a really wonderful sense of color. And then also wonderful sense of composition, which goes back to the story of David Dewey. I mean, I think Dewey saw him doing something. His approach to a particular landscape motif is what struck Dewey at that time.
We're going to go to a caller. Claire's calling from South Portland. Hi, Claire, go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling from South Portland, but I'm a Lewiston native. My grandmother, my mother, and I, all Lewiston High School graduates. So I have to say, Marsden Hartley was born in Lewiston and did
He
not
was.
come, and he was there. He lived there till he was 14. So I think in the beginning, it was implicated that he came to Maine, but he's a Lewiston native. And in fact, my neighbor on College Street, Lewiston, owned it, later bought his aunt's house where they found one of his paintings in the attic, not in
Oh,
the
what
attic,
a
in the
great
barn.
story. Claire,
Oh,
thank you. And
lucky
yes, I
them.
did know that Marsden Hartley was born in Maine. He left for a great bit of his life, though, but Carl, he came back.
He did. He went off to Europe. He went to the Southwest, New York City, all about. But I consider one of his great periods is when he returned to Maine and was living in Korea, way down east, and did some of his greatest paintings at that time, late 30s, early 40s. He died in Ellsworth in 1943.
Well, you're talking about, Claire's calling about, and you're talking about Marsden Hartley, who died before Joseph Fiore came to Maine, but he was an influence on Joseph Fiore, correct?
Yes. And in fact, in the great monograph that David Dewey did of Joseph Fiore's work, there are reproductions of both Marin and Hartley paintings. It's hard to get away from them. They both Marin and Hartley had strong impact on a whole generation of artists that came up after them, including my Uncle Bill, William Keambush, the painter. They all look back at the energy and the way they treated the landscape, and yeah, I they're gods for
Calling in now
sure.
is Richard Kane, who is a filmmaker with Kane Lewis Productions. He directed the documentary Joseph Fiore, Nature of the Artist, and that is debuting Thursday night on Maine Public Television. Thanks so much for calling in, Dick.
You're welcome, Jennifer. How are you?
Good. Before
and thank
I ask
you,
Carl,
for...
yeah, I understand you're on a shoot and you don't have a lot of time. But before we ask you questions, I want to play a little bit of the trailer of the film. So we'll listen to that and then I'll ask you about it.
Well, he came to New York. He was on 29th Street and I was on 28th Street. I was carrying a paint box over to the river. He seemed intrigued by that. I was doing plein air painting on the Hudson River.
There were a group of painters that would go to Long Island, and there were the group of painters that went to Provincetown, and then there were the painters that came to Maine.
Maine seemed to fit. Had a real low cost of living up here.
So there we go. Richard, tell us who we just heard.
Well, you were listening to Alex Katz, one of Maine's most famous painters, and his son, Vincent Katz, is a great art author and wrote a book about Black Mountain College. Before I get into that, the other speaker was Lois Dodd, and she talked about, in the film, she talked about how Joe Fiore was kind of a calm, quiet character. And yet, Joe really had a tremendous influence on Black Mountain College, where he was a student beginning in 1946. He was a GI coming out of World War II, and with a lot of the GIs, they got the GI Bill and they went to colleges of their choice. Joe's father, Salvador Fiore, wanted Joe to become a violinist. And Joe said, no way, I'm going to be a painter. Salvador was one of the founding violinists of the Cleveland Orchestra. So you can see why he wanted Joe to become a musician. Well, Joe did become a musician, a pianist. But his love and his passion was painting. So in 46, he joined what was gaining a reputation as being one of the most exciting, interesting cauldrons of creativity in Black Mountain College. And so he was a student from 46 until 49. And Black Mountain College was an attraction to so many of the European, from the artists from the Bauhaus. And if you know, that was in 1933 that the Bauhaus began and that the Nazis began to rise. And the artists all understood and saw the writing on the wall that they could not be an artist in an authoritarian state. It was his name again, Joseph Albers. Came across from the Bauhaus and was given the position of the head of the art program, and he proceeded to basically construct a curriculum that was that took the arts as the central place of the curriculum at Black Mountain.
Now, when you're talking about this very influential art school, Black Mountain, you're not talking about Black Mountain in Rumford. This is in North Carolina. But one of the reasons it's relevant to this film, Dick, is because Joe Fiore and others who studied there and taught there did end up in Maine via New York.
Exactly. And many of the Joe is there at Black Mountain before the New York School really became the New York School. And then all of those artists that emigrated from Black Mountain to New York, many of them during the summers, it was just too hot to be in New York City. So they found their way up to Maine, people like Lois Dodd and Alex Katz, who you heard at the beginning, and so many other of the Maine artists that Carl has written about in his many books on art history. I also want to mention, I don't know if you have already, but Carl is giving a talk tomorrow night about his newest book on art of the Penobscot Bay. So you can learn so much about the artists who left New York, left Black Mountain, and came to Maine, where, you know, the landscape and the lifestyle really allowed for a tremendous explosion of art. Talking about a cauldron of creativity. I mean, that's what Maine became and continues to be.
Well, Dick, before we let you go, I need to ask you this question. What do you hope people who see the film will come away with?
Well, an appreciation for how central the arts are to education and to communities and to Maine And I hope that they come away wanting to see more and wanting to learn more and wanting to teach their children more about art and society and freedom. And I think that it's really telling how when Albers left the Bauhaus in 1933, came to Black Mountain, he came again because he saw the writing on the wall that art cannot exist in an authoritarian state. So we have to support the arts.
Well, Dick, thank you so much for calling in, especially since you're out in the field on a shoot. Richard Kane is a filmmaker, and he directed the film Joseph Fiore, Nature of the Artist. It will air on Maine Public Television this week. Thursday evening is the first time, but also on Friday and Saturday. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are learning about the influential life and legacy of artist Joseph Fiore and his deep ties to Maine. With me today, Carl Little, who you know from his many books about art in Maine. Share your comments and questions via email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Kay, who's calling from Jefferson. Hi, Kay. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I had the great pleasure of meeting Joe Fiore in 2007 in Damariscotta. He was having a show at a gallery that was there called Yvette Torres Fine Art, and I was writing reviews of her art shows, and he was one of the artists that she featured, and it was just an incredible show. He was very, very quiet. He didn't like to talk about his art too much, which many artists don't, I've really been interested in his art, and I'm just so glad that the Maine Art Gallery is doing this show this year. I'm vice president of the Maine Art Gallery, and the president and I discussed having a show, and he came up with the idea, and I said, yes, let's do it. And last year we had a show honoring some of our founding artists, and Joe was in one of his paintings was in that show or two, and I organized an art talk with two of the gallerists who showed his work in Damariscotta, Yvette and another person, and it was just so interesting for them to talk about their associations with Joe and visiting him in his studio in Jefferson and how he would be playing the piano with his wife, and they both love music a lot. So anyway, I just wanted to say that it was a pleasure meeting him. And
Kay, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your remembrance of Joe Fiore. Carl, I want to ask you, one of the things we've been talking about is how today, in 2025, his name is not as well known as some of his contemporaries, even though at the time now his work is collected by major museums. Do you think maybe that's because he was sort of quiet and kept to himself?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. And by the way, that was Kay Liss. You can see her interviews with those two gallery owners on YouTube. They're fun. So the impression that you get from folks who knew Fiore is that he was a very humble guy, and not really after gain and glory, just devoted to making art. And I think that modesty may in part explain how he flew a little bit beneath the radar, as it were, under the radar. And I quote a critic here who once said, were Joe's life a movie, he would be described as the strong silent type with hidden depths, which I love. And then in the documentary, Lois Dodd says, he never tried to impress you with bravado or coziness or preciousness. So that, he was modest and didn't throw himself out there. Now, it's interesting, though, that there's a famous painting by Alex Katz called The Cocktail Party, and it's sort of quintessential New York Soho kind of painting. And there is Joe Fiore right in the middle of it, like a cameo appearance, like a Hitchcock film, sort of. And there's Yvonne Jacquette and other artist friends of Alex's, and they were all at a party at his Soho apartment loft, and he decided to sort of memorialize the scene. And so it's curious. I sometimes think of Joe Fiore as the Forrest Gump of the art world. I mean, there he is at Black Mountain, and then again he shows up on the 10th Street art scene and the New York art scene. Then he's in Maine with all of these great artists in the 50s. So he sort of was, sort of showed up in these places and was a part of it, but sort of a quiet part of it.
Yeah, well, Kay, thank you so much for calling in. And on the line with us now, Emily Gehrman Ladd, who is Assistant Director of Engagement and Communication with the Maine Farmland Trust. Emily, explain the link between Joe Fiore and the Maine Farmland Trust.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. So, you might be wondering, Maine Farmland Trust artwork, what's the connection? So Maine Farmland Trust is a statewide member-powered nonprofit land trust, and our goal is really about keeping agricultural lands working and helping farmers in their communities thrive. And we were founded in 1999, and Joseph and Mary Fiore were incredibly passionate environmentalists, and so they were among Maine Farmland Trust's first substantial supporters back in those early days. So their support really helped us to grow, especially in that first decade. And they also supported a lot of other environmental organizations in Maine and beyond. And with Maine Farmland Trust in particular, they really saw the importance of protecting and stewarding our farmland and those farmland landscapes so that the good soils and the open fields and then other features of the natural landscape that he loved and painted so much, like forests and wetlands and waterfront, can stay a renewable resource for generations to come. So we're really grateful at Maine Farmland Trust for all that the Fiores did to support our work during their lifetimes.
And I understand at a long time at his farm, Rolling Acres Farm, there was a program, a residency program. Does that still exist? And whether or not it does, tell us about who came through that and what its goals were.
Yeah, sure. So I don't believe it was the Fiore's farm themselves. I think it was another farm just down the road from them in Jefferson, but. So after Joseph Fiore's death, the Falcon Foundation, which was kind of formed out of Fiore's estate, gifted Maine Farmland Trust all of the remaining paintings from his landscape oeuvre to help honor and advance their longstanding commitment to MFT and environmental stewardship. And so in partnership with the Falcon Foundation, back in 2015, MFT established the Joseph A. Fiore Art Center and Artist Residency Program at that farm, Rolling Acres. And that's a farm that Maine Farmland Trust had purchased and protected with an agricultural conservation easement. And then from 2016 to 2020, Fiore's artworks were displayed in the farmhouse gallery, and we had an artist residency program that inspired over 30 artists to create works that really speak to that connection with the environment in different ways through the visual, performing, literary arts. We even had resident gardeners who made works of their own as tenders of the land. That was a really beautiful thing. And I do want to quickly thank and acknowledge its two co-directors, Anna Aurora, who for 10 plus years led MFT's Belfast Gallery and the Fiore Art Center. And then David Dewey, who, as Carl mentioned earlier, is the curator of the Maine Art Gallery's exhibition this summer. Those two really made that special place the place that it was. So as we emerged from the pandemic, unfortunately, our programming shifted and Maine Farmland Trust made the really difficult decision to retire those art programs. But we really continue to deeply believe in the transformative power of art and storytelling to really inspire, engage, educate, deepen people's connection to farms.
Well, Emily, thank you so much for calling in. That's Emily Gehrman Ladd with Maine Farmland Trust. And Carl, why don't I ask you, even though this specific residency no longer exists, I know that there are others around the state, and I'm wondering how important are those to young artists or emerging artists to have an opportunity to be in residency at a place that supports them?
Yeah, the Fiore residency was very special, and I'm frankly I'm disappointed that they couldn't keep it going, because I went there while it was ongoing, and I know the artists were doing some great work there, Robert Pullian, others. It is really important that the artists have a time to be away from the world, just to focus on their work, be taken care of. And Maine has so many of these wonderful residencies. I mean, right off the top of my head, Monson Arts up in Monson. I mean, that is an incredible residency. Hewn Oaks, the Monhegan Artists Residency. There are a bunch of them. And I think that and then another one that I was at recently is the Surf Point Foundation in York, Maine, which was started by Beverly Hallam and Mary Lee Smart. And their vision was to have a place. The studios were all set up. They left their house so that other artists could continue to work in those spaces. And it's just a wonderful legacy that they left. But they had this vision that they should be well taken care of, have their lunches there, dinners, just focus on your work. Don't worry about anything else. And I think the proof is in the pudding that these artists have produced a lot of wonderful work during these residencies. It's not just a sort of vacation time. They get down to work. I was a resident for a week out on Great Spruce Head Island many years ago as a poet. And you land and you settle in, and then you've got to do some work. You got to earn your pay. So these opportunities are wonderful, and there are many of them.
Calling in now is Carrie Hadley, who is a nonprofit consultant and project manager for the Maine Art Gallery, which is presenting the exhibit Fiori at 100, Maine Observe. Thanks so much for calling in, Carrie.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so I understand the exhibit opens in 2 days. Are you ready?
Yes, it opens on Thursday, and will be open Thursdays through Sundays through August. This is the longest we've done an exhibition for because it's such a large exhibition, and it's in we're one of the oldest art galleries and or museums in the state of Maine. We began in 1958, along with what was the MCA, the Algonquin Museum, the Farnsworth, and all those artists that were mentioned, Wyatt, Nevelson, Stevis, Zorak, they were all early members of the gallery, along with Fiori.
And I know it's a nonprofit, and it's just in a beautiful building. Let me ask you, Carrie, why was it important to you to have this show on Joseph Fiori's 100th anniversary of his birth?
Yes. Well, again, I think the board, we're located in an 1807 National Historic Register building with a long history since 1958 with the town of Wiscasset. And when we looked at our history, what does set us apart? What do we offer? It is kind of the mentorship and the generations of fabulous artists who continue to this day into contemporary artists. And so we've done a couple of years of generations where we had the mentorship that the older generations have passed along to the new artists. We are a membership organization, nonprofit with over 200 members, and we host both juried and non-juried exhibition opportunities for our members. And you're right, it's such a beautiful space. It's the building. It was a schoolhouse at one point, built by little local people in Wiscasset as an academy, and has super high ceilings, large windows, sunlight streaming, and it's just gorgeous space to see art in.
And Carrie, tell us about the exhibit, the Joe Fiori exhibit. Does this represent all the different eras of his work, or does it focus on his time in Maine? And how many pieces are in it? How many paintings?
It represents, it's all of his main works. And again, the works were bequeathed to Maine Farmland Trust. And we're doing the show in partnership with them as their works are for sale, at least most of them. I think there might be one that's not. There's at least 100 works. And it's paired with member shows because we're a membership organization. So downstairs is the Fiori exhibit. Upstairs is Maine Observed by our juried members for half of the period of Fiori. And then in July, we'll pair it with our Plein Air Painted Maine show, which will be paintings from all over. They can paint from all over the state to put them into the show. So it's very special. I have to comment on what you said, Carl. I loved when I heard the quote from Hilton Kramer, who was the famous art critic for the New York Times for 25 years. He said, when the heck is somebody going to do a retrospective on Joseph Fiore in New York or Maine? And we're just so happy to say, we're doing it.
Well, that's great, Carrie. Congratulations to you. Carl, before we say goodbye to Carrie, is there anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, well, it's just a wonderful show because it's a real cross-section of his whole oeuvre. There's abstractions, there's watercolors, there's paintings. There are a couple of paintings that I covet, many, many actually, but I was going to mention one in particular called Virgo Tiger, 1986. And it's a rather abstract painting with rocks, but then kind of overlaid on the rocks are the wings of the virgin tiger moth, beautiful bright orange with black markings. You got to see it to believe it.
Carrie Hadley, thank you so much for calling in. Carrie Hadley is with the Maine Art Gallery. And here's an email from Suzette McAvoy, who's an independent curator, arts writer, and former executive director of the Center for Maine Contemporary Art. She was unable to call in, so she sent this email. I had the great pleasure of meeting Joe Fiore at an exhibit of his work at the Center for Maine Contemporary Art in Rockport in 2004 when I was curator at the Farnsworth Art Museum. Several studio visits followed, and we acquired his painting Twelfth Night, based on the Shakespeare play, for the museum's collection. Joe was soft-spoken and thoughtful. As they say, still waters run deep. I admired him enormously for his dedication to a life in art. He lived and breathed painting, and he was never swayed by the vagaries of the market. He always trod his own path. The one through line was his profound commune with nature, which runs through all of his work, whether abstract or representational. It was his lodestar. We're going to take another quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation about Maine artist Joe Fiore, our phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. The artist Joseph Fiore spent summers in Jefferson, Maine, and his love for Maine's natural setting became a central theme in his life and paintings. He's being celebrated 100 years since his birth with a retrospective exhibition and a documentary film. Joining me to discuss Fiore's influence as an art teacher and, Fiore was an artist and a teacher, but who we have with us is an author, critic, and writer, Carl Little. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. On the line with us now is Jude Valentine, who is a landscape painter who did a residency at the Fiore Art Center. Thanks so much for calling in, Jude.
Oh, thank you for hosting this show about the work of Joseph Fiore.
Tell us about your residency. Oh, and Carl says hi. Tell us about
hi,
your residency.
Carl.
When was it and what did it mean to you?
Yeah, it was in September of 2017, which feels like so long ago now, but it meant a great deal to me because of the time that I had, a full month to work, and there was only one other artist there, and she was frequently, I had the place basically to myself, so it was just amazing. And to be able to work right outside and right on the shore of Damariscotta Lake, and then just to experience the quality of the light there in September, the waning light of the fall, the summer season moving into fall, that lower light that comes in, it was just amazing, really just amazing.
Jude, what would you say it is about Fiore's work that made it special?
Oh, his incredible and brave use of color and composition with color was so inspiring to me. David Dewey hosted, he had not so much an open house, but I was able to accompany him to Fiore's studio before it was sold. And of course, there were works on display at Rolling Acres, but to see his work up front, like smaller pieces that weren't under glass, the quality of the light in them and just his use of color in composition was so inspiring to me.
I have a feeling Carl wants to jump in and say something to you, Jude. Am I reading your mind correctly, Carl?
Well, I would, you know, this is personal, but you know, I just wanted to mention that the Rolling Acres is still being used, as it were, as a place, as kind of a retreat. And I have a granddaughter who's going to Wavis, Camp Wavis this summer, and they're spending 2 days there at the what was the residency. So I'm waiting to hear back from her what it's like. But yeah, I wrote a little piece about the residents who spent time there, and from all of them got these, just, you know, just as Jude was saying, rave reports of being able to get work done and just being, you know, immersed in a wonderful landscape.
Yes,
Jude, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, the sense of the landscape was just so well loved. There was something about that particular piece of property that was well cared for, and there was even, you know, like a family gravesite on the property, which is not a macabre thing. I mean, it was really how life was, you know, when that was an active farm. But there was such a sense of peace there that was so conductive to inspiration.
And Jude, I'm wondering if either personally or through people you know, you have any stories to share about Joe Fiore.
I don't, but I can say that his work, you know, the inspiration for this residency program has legs, because last summer I was out in Colorado. I was awarded a residency at Elsewhere Studios, and they had just the year before lost their own residency space. And because one of their board members has published books called Piney Woods Atlas, so she would go around the country with her girlfriend, and they would visit these various residencies and then publish about them. And because she came here to visit Rolling Acres, they were able to think differently about a residency. And so the residency that I was part of last summer was on an organic farm. And that wouldn't have been possible unless they came,
Fantastic.
Unless Rolling Acres existed. Yeah. So it's like, it's just such a vision, such a visionary program in so many ways. And likewise, when I was out in Colorado, it was phenomenal being on a farm, a working farm, and just having that sense of the landscape. And then, of course, out there are the mountains. But that's the short story that I wanted to share with everybody.
Well,
wonderful.
Jude, thank you so much for calling in. Jude Valentine is a landscape painter who was a resident in 2017 at the Fiore Art Center, the Rolling Hills Acres in Jefferson. Thank you so much for calling in. We're going to go to a couple emails here. An email from Bob. Not only was Joe an early influence as an artist, but he was a world-class birder, butterfly watcher, and wildflower expert, well known in the Central Park birder community, as is his son, Tom.
Who knew?
You didn't know that, Carl. That's great.
No,
that's what we love
wonderful.
About Maine Calling. Our audience is smart and knows a lot.
I
email here from Maggie. In the York and Ogunquit area, Henry Strader is well known. Many years after his death, how is he seen as an artist? Good or not so much in his contribution to Maine artists? So another name that's not a household name, but also an artist who's well known in his day, Henry Strader. Carl, what would you like to say about him?
Yeah, he was very important because he founded the Ogunquit Museum of American Art. And if you go there today, there's a wonderful little exhibition of his work that I think it's sort of permanently displayed there to honor his role in forming that incredible gallery. And in fact, there's a show there now of an artist named Nicole Wittenberg. And I don't know that she ever knew Joseph Fiore or his work, but you can definitely see a connection. Her sense of landscape is very, very close to Joe's. I did want to mention that about the documentary, which I understand is being shown on Maine Public Television later this week, that I was a co-pilot with Dick Kane on some of the interviews in that documentary, including ones with Charlie Duvack and Lois Dodd. And I just want to mention that the very end of the film, there's a clip that's the only clip that they could find of Fiore living. And he's seated at this old upright piano in his home in Jefferson, and he's playing Bach. And it's just a beautiful moment. It's a perfect ending, spoiler alert, but perfect ending of that documentary. And I hope people will tune in and watch that.
I have an email here from Sydney. I'm so happy many revered Joseph Fiore. He was my art teacher at the Philadelphia College of Art in 1965 or 1966. I think he was a better painter than teacher, or maybe he just didn't like me. So, Sydney, what a memory to have. So maybe it's that strong, silent, quiet part is doesn't necessarily translate to teaching everybody. We're going to go back to Carrie Hadley from the Maine Art Gallery. Carrie, you wanted to tell us about some events coming up?
Yes, thank you so much. We as we do with every exhibit that we have or host, we program themed talks. All of them are free. And in this case, we've done kind of even more because there's so much depth to Fiore and that period. So the opening reception is this Saturday, June 21st from 4:30 to 6:30. At the gallery. It's also a summer solstice party. And then next Thursday, June 26th, we were always open for the Wiscasset Art Walk, which is a really special, fun art walk. We're hosting a talk then with Jude Valentine, who you just heard, and Michael Droge, who both were artists at the Fiore Arts Center. And then, really exciting, we're bringing up Fiore's daughter, Susanna Fiore, who plays piano and with a bassist at the George Mason Beautiful Barn and Art Studio venue. It's considered Noble Bird, Gilmer Scotter, Saturday, June 28th at 4:30 for a concert. And then David Dewey will present remarks about his time with Fiore. And that is a pay as you can with a suggested donation. And you can just email the art gallery or watch for it on our website to get more information.
Great, Carrie. So on your website, we can find information about all of that. Carl, we have just a little bit of time left, but I wanted to ask you a couple questions. The first is about, you know, you've talked about how even the most abstract artists come to Maine and start painting landscapes. How does a landscape painter not paint the cliche? How do we you know, of all the landscapes you see in Maine, what makes the difference? Which ones take your breath away?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And, you know, I remember seeing a bumper sticker once that said, "I hate lighthouse paintings," or something like that, or lighthouse art. And, you know, of course, we have Edward Hopper in large part to blame for that. He was the great lighthouse painter. You know, I mean, they're fabulous paintings. But I think it's, you know, it's how you look at the world around you. I mean, you look at someone like Lois Dodd in her studio in Cushing, and she doesn't really wander that far from that little house in that studio. She finds subjects in her gardens and in a neighbor's garden, and brings them alive. You know, she did that wonderful series of nude women in the landscape. It came out of a very hot summer. They were doing a lot of from life drawing outside, and they're sawing and, you know, putting up laundry. And so I think there's another example of this is Monhegan. You know, how many artists have gone to Monhegan and have found something to work out to respond to out there? It's always different. It's just what strikes the individual.
Hmm. Yeah. Jamie Wyeth told me how much he loves seagulls. You would never call one of his seagulls a typical cliched seagull, would you?
No, those are demonic seagulls. Yeah, definitely.
And we just have a little time left and not really enough time to answer this question properly. But when we think about a great artist and how greatness is defined and why someone like Joe Fiore has fallen out of the public view, this is like a question for the ages, right?
It totally is. And I look at Maine art and artists very democratically. I mean, I just think everybody's contributing to the whole scene and the you know, everybody has a place, and I love seeing that. And there's just, for me personally, there's just no end of work to write about, which of course I appreciate enormously. You know, being able to see these artists in their studios and find out what they're thinking about and how they approach the world. It's a privilege.
And we are lucky to have you. Carl Little, a writer and the author of several art books, also a poet. Thank you. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Main Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. If you've been waiting for the list of summer book recommendations from Friday's Main Calling program, that will be on our website this afternoon. So check out maincalling.org, which is always also a great place to sign up for our weekly newsletter. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Main Calling on Maine Public Radio.